If I ever slipped and fell on a banana peel and landed on a whoopee cushion releasing a deafening fart sound, and then when I bent over to pick up the banana peel, my pants ripped and revealed my boxers with hearts on them, and then when I stood up straight, my pants fell all the way down, and then I tripped over my pants around my ankles and fell down a huge cliff, and then when I land, I leave a hole shaped like my body, and then when I climbed out of the hole, an anvil landed on my head and flattened me like an accordion, I would be low-key embarrassed.
It's a beautiful day in the Gulch. The mulberries gave me diarrhea, but that's a story for another time.
That's a modern tragedy.
Yeah.
How can you tell it was the mulberries that gave you diarrhea?
Honestly, I ate some taquitos from the Rollers at 7-Eleven on the way home from work the night before. It was probably that.
Either one is a likely culprit.
Well, Kroger's closed now at midnight, so I've been actually doing that a lot.
Eating at the gas station?
Yeah.
The gas station's out of your way from work, isn't it?
It is, yeah. But sometimes I'm very hungry.
And Rally's isn't going to cut it, so...
Well, Rally's also closes at 4 a.m.
Oh, so I didn't know that.
When I get out of work, there's nothing open except for the gas station. And I usually don't have food because I'm an idiot. So, I go to the gas station and I'll get some taquitos.
So that's your number one meal from the gas station?
Yeah, I mean, there is healthier options, but it's the only hot option
right
at that time, I think. And like, I'm usually like really tired and I'm just like, fuck it, whatever, I'll have one of these fucking chicken stick things and like eat like a cheddar dog and like a tornado. The other day I got like one of the sausage and the egg ones, or sausage and pancake
ones. Oh, they had the breakfast ones out.
Yeah.
Those might be fresh then. That's a good sign, I think.
Yeah.
If they were putting them out at 4 a.m.
Yeah.
Or they were 20 hours old.
They were 24 hours old. Oh, dear.
So yeah. You said you watched that circus documentary on Netflix?
Yes.
And you liked it?
Yeah, it was fascinating. It was like, I was like, oh, what is this going to be, like some dorky steampunk shit or something? But it was like really bizarre, very, really, like riveting, really interesting.
Yeah, it is. It's interesting stuff. That kind of thing seems like purely American in a way, and also some, like, you know, a bygone era. Honestly, I think the like modern day equivalent would be the Fyre Fest. I think everyone's made up their mind about the Fyre Fest, but that's another thing where it's just like a shyster, like faking something and like.
Yeah, except Barnum was wildly successful.
Right,
he was like the.
That's true.
Biggest entertainment mogul.
People like the circus, like. That's true.
But yeah, there was a bit of a fire festival for Barnum when his fucking museum full of rare animals
caught on fire.
To the ground.
Yeah.
Imagine all those rare animals. They all died, you know it.
Yeah, it's sad. Down. But also in that day, like most animals were rare.
Like rare because you
they just hadn't seen
you hadn't
many
seen
things.
Them yet.
They didn't have Google Image to look at.
Yeah. Yeah, dude. People were like, whoa, is that a weasel? I've only read about them in Redwall books.
And heard about them in school rhymes.
Yeah.
Yeah, we wanted to figure out what bopping a weasel... Wait, what's popping... Pop Goes the Weasel. What do you think that means?
So
you don't think it's literally about a monkey popping a weasel?
No. I don't.
Do you think it's like mafia slang?
No, I remember hearing something about it being like about the plague or something when I was a kid.
The plague.
Yeah.
No, I think you're thinking
the ring around.
Yeah,
the
you're
Rosie.
Thinking of Ring Around the Rosie. Fuck. But I think All Around the Mulberry Bush, it's probably the same kind of logic can apply. I think it's some kind of parable.
It's definitely some kind of, like, yeah, it's like a euphemism for something else. But I don't know what it could be. Like, is the monkey a literal monkey? I don't know. Also, there's different versions. I briefly glanced at the Wikipedia earlier. I didn't read it, though. I Google imaged the Wikipedia. No, I'm kidding. Yeah, there's, like, different versions. There's an American version.
Yeah.
And then there's a European version. And the American version is the All Around the Mulberry Bush one.
Yeah, but the English version is half a pound of tuppenny rice, half a pound of treacle. That's the way the money goes. Pop goes the weasel. Half
what
a pound of tuppenny rice. And there's more verses.
What is the monkey?
Every
the monkey
night
doing?
When I go out, the monkey's on the table.
Oh,
take
man.
A stick and knock it off. Pop goes the weasel.
Damn. Dude, they're hitting a monkey with a stick.
And then,
that's not very
when
nice.
It first came to America in the 19th century, it was all around the cobbler's house. The monkey chased the people. And after them in double haste, pop goes the weasel. So it wasn't the mulberry bush until
1914. Whoa. Hmm. Is there like a meaning page, like where it says the meaning?
Yeah, there's meaning interpretations. One of them says that pop goes the weasel could be a reference to weasel and stoat, which is Cockney rhyming slang for throat, as in get that down your weasel, meaning to eat or drink something.
I like that, but why would your throat go pop?
I don't know. I think it's kind of inconclusive.
Oh, is it like the Jabberwocky, where it's like just a nonsense?
It could be something like
nonsense
that.
Nonsense nursery rhyme.
It could also be something like Hoosier, where the true meaning and origin of the word isn't really...
It's lost.
It's totally lost.
I didn't know that, actually.
About Hoosier?
Yeah.
Have you read into that?
No.
I've read some people say, like, it stands for whose ear. Like, they used to wrestle for fun. Like, rural pioneers didn't have entertainment, so they would go to wrestling competitions for leisure. And they were so violent that someone would lose their ear.
No way.
And then they would yell in their Scots-Irish accents, like, Hoosier!
That
like
sounds
a couple
like some fucking bullshit.
I know, I don't quite buy it. There's some other ones like that. I wonder if I can pull it up real quick. Origin. Yeah.
Ears don't come off in a wrestling match.
They would in a violent one. John Wick would take off someone's ear.
He'd bite off the ear?
In a wrestling match.
You bite off an ear?
I watched Kung Fu Hustle. You ever see that?
Yeah, I like those movies.
It's really good. Funny stuff.
Really over the top.
Good choreography.
Yeah.
Oh, I also saw Godzilla the other week.
Oh, weird.
Yeah, a new Godzilla movie came out.
It seems like there is always a new Godzilla movie coming out every, like, 5 years or so.
Well, there was one, like, 5 years ago.
Okay.
In 2014. But, yeah, there really is a lot of Godzilla. But, man, I don't know.
Plenty of Godzilla to go around.
It's not a great movie. It's not really riveting stuff, watching some buildings fall down with no one in them, apparently.
You know what fell down?
London Bridge is falling down.
P.T. Barnum's museum full of rare animals. It fell down when it burnt to the ground.
When it burnt and caught on fire. That's right.
I took some notes about things that I thought were, like, really interesting from that from that documentary. Like, let's see. He also, they talked about capturing the animals, and they said they were, like, capturing these rhinoceroses from India.
Yeah.
And catching four rhinoceroses. In the process of capturing four rhinoceroses, 40 Indian men were killed.
That's so messed up. I do remember that part, because I remember, it's like kind of a Ken Burns style documentary, yeah, where it's just a voiceover over like slowly panning photographs. Because I remember they were like slowly panning down on this gorilla that was like...
Yeah, dude, I remember
it
that.
Was so messed up. It, like a gorilla that was like strung up in
it was like
the gallows or something.
Arms. Yeah. Very strange. Also, in around the same time, there was an elephant, a picture of an elephant wearing pajamas. And it was really cute.
Like the striped pajamas that they wore in olden days with like a floppy stocking cap.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Or maybe it was a clown outfit, which are similar. But yeah, I like that. And then there was like a, a thing where they muzzled a hippopotamus and you could pet it, which is insane.
Yeah.
Hippopotamuses are so dangerous.
I remember they were like, there is nothing in the world like touching the flesh of a hippopotamus.
Yeah.
They were like really romanticizing
that
experience.
I wrote that right here. When will you be able to touch a hippopotamus? Really, like, that's probably like one of the few times in human history at that point, probably the maybe the only time where you can like safely touch a hippopotamus, because they're like one of the most dangerous animals in the world.
Yeah, they always say they kill the most humans in Africa.
Yeah, I wonder how many people were killed. If 40 people in India died trying to catch these four rhinoceroses,
how many people
died getting those hippopotamuses?
Yeah, that is crazy to think about. Also, like...
Hippopotamuses. I'm sorry, continue.
You know, yeah, it's just funny that it's like so many people die just so some, like, snot-nosed, depression-era child could touch a... some scamp could touch a hippopotamus when the circus comes to town. Any other good bits?
Well, that reminded me of, like, one time I was in the Wisconsin Dells.
Yeah.
And I went to this park called Timbavati, and it was like a petting zoo, but with rare animals.
Yeah.
And you could buy carrot sticks, and you could feed them to the giraffes. And I, like, put a carrot stick in my mouth and let the giraffe eat the carrot stick out of my mouth.
Did its like tongue get on your face?
Yeah. And their tongues are like these really long, bright blue, like sticky.
Yeah, like bizarre. Fleshy worms.
Yeah, they're like coil out, like they like coil out like springs. And they're like this really brilliant blue color. It was so fascinating and interesting. I was like, that was like probably like the closest I've been to like feeling like a child at the circus. When I actually was a child at the circus, I remember one time when I was like 19, I got all drunk with like my girlfriend and her roommates and stuff at the time, and we went to the circus when the circus was in town.
Yeah,
they were like freshmen in college.
Was this in West Lafayette at
this
Purdue?
This was in Goshen.
Okay.
And we somehow met like the contortionists and trapeze artists and shit, and we invited them to the party after the circus, and they came.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I feel like circuses went on for too long.
Yeah.
Like, they shouldn't have had traveling circuses in, like, 2009.
Yeah,
like,
this is probably, like, 2007 or 8.
Yeah.
And, yeah, like...
Even up until, like...
The contortionist came through in, like, her leotard.
Yeah.
And, like, was just... dancing on like with everybody. And
I think they should have stopped circuses in like the 1950s. I think they hit peak circus well before that.
There was the trapeze artist was this little boy. I think he was probably like 15, and like, he, like, got drunk at that party. And he, like, was talking to my friend and was, like, he was, like, we're gonna do it. We're gonna have sex. And he was, like, so excited. He was, like, really, like, coming on to her really hard. And she was, like, no, you're, like, a 15-year-old boy and you're, like, in the circus. Like, I'm not gonna have sex with you.
Did he, was he born in the circus or was he a runaway who joined the circus?
I don't know, man. I don't know if, like,
I love to be a child.
Do people still run away?
Yeah, you pack up your little bindle stick. You put, like, your all your stuff in one of those knapsacks and put it over your shoulder and go to the circus. I don't think people still join the circus, but I wouldn't even think circuses still exist. So, I don't know.
The circus used to come through the backyard. My backyard has train tracks in it where I grew up. And I would see the circus cars go by on the train, on the railroad track, and you could see the animals in the cars. That shit is crazy. That sounds like a story that, like, my grandfather would tell. You know, like, that's insane. But yeah, it, like, still existed. And, like, I don't know, does it still exist now? I didn't watch the second half of that documentary.
How many parts are there?
I don't know how many parts.
Yeah, I feel like they must talk about the fall of the circus.
The state of the circus is certainly bleak.
I wonder if
it was bleak the whole fucking
But if
time.
You include, like, Cirque du Soleil and
Love some, Cirque du Soleil.
Yeah, and some of those more ambitious approximations of the circus, I feel like there's something worth talking about there.
Well, that's, I mean, it's circus in the sense that it's a show with a ring, with acrobats and animals and shit. But it's not like a...
I don't think
it's
they...
It's not like a circus.
I don't think they have animals in Cirque du Soleil.
Oh,
I think
yeah.
they're committed to not using animals because it's, you know...
They're just like some buff, trippy clown ballerinas.
Yeah, I also think Cirque du Soleil's French, yeah? Like,
yeah.
I feel like that informs their philosophy towards performance.
How so?
I don't know. It's just way more, it's just more subtle and artistic than, you know, Barnum and Bailey's three ring big top.
A lot more pretentious than
Barnum and Bailey. Pretentious is a more apt reading of it,
but that's good. I like thinking about, like, I want to go to the Cirque du Soleil and, like, drink a Cosmo and, like, you know, eat some magic mushrooms or something.
Well, they do that in Knocked Up.
Yeah, they do that, yeah. That's where I got that idea.
Yeah.
But it's wonderful. It's a wonderful concept. It would make the show so much better. I don't know. The acrobats are truly, like, the most impressive part of the whole thing anyway. Like, another thing they said in the... Like they said repeatedly in that documentary, is like, it's about conjuring your own miracles. Within each of us is a desire to do something spectacular.
Right.
And the trapeze artists, truly spectacular.
They're really pro circus in that portion of the documentary. I have to say, they're not. You know, they're never like, yeah, it was like this weird thing that just capitalized on the spectacle and, you know, paid its performers really poorly and abused animals. I wonder if that's going to be what part three is. But part one's all about how the circus... What did they say about the acrobats?
It's about doing something spectacular. Feats of strength. For just a few moments, they're flying. Very romantic. And that's, like, that's the element that Cirque du Soleil took and is like, all right, this is, here's your aerialist, here's your, like, contortionist.
Like, yeah, intellectualized.
Yeah,
though.
They're like, we won't hurt animals, we'll just, like, be some buff clowns for you. And I think that's pretty cool.
Did you write down what that lady said about how circuses started the tradition of like the ritual of intermittency.
I don't know what that means.
Intermittency. The ritual of intermittency.
I looked it up and I still don't know what you mean by that. And I don't know. Like, do you want to try and explain it to me? Because I don't know what it means.
It means that, like, I don't know how they started it, but I guess it means they started the, like, they kind of made a show of coming to town and then leaving.
Oh, okay. So it's like they're, like, it's like, very transient.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all about, it's a moment. It's like the circus comes to town and everyone's excited.
Hmm, yeah. Well, I think that, like, I don't know if, they probably didn't invent that.
I know, that was kind of a bold claim by that particular circus historian. But I was here for it.
Well, a lot of circus clowns are dressed as tramps.
That's right.
And, like, that's the tramp lifestyle. It's, like, to be just in town for a while, then gone again on a train, you know. Yeah. So I think the hobo invented it. Like, that'd be like the original American transients, probably. Or like the, I don't know, the gold rush or something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You said you read more from that clown book?
Oh, yeah. I read the intro where Bodino talks about his life.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. He was a banker.
Yeah.
And he was depressed.
Sure.
Sort of a classic, you know, classic, like, white-collar guy, unfulfilled, but is rich, probably.
Yeah.
So has the money to be like, I don't want to do this anymore. I'll be a clown. You know?
Yeah.
But actually what he says in it was he wanted to do both, but his job gave him the ultimatum. They're like, you need to stop doing this clown Bodino bullshit or we're going to fire you.
I can understand how the bank...
And they gave him an ultimatum.
Yeah, I can understand how the bank wouldn't want some clown on their staff.
Yeah, they're like, yeah, he'll handle your money great, yeah. He's not too good with, like, hammers and like, you know, like, I don't know. What is a clown gag? You know, like, I guess hammers.
Yeah, he's not going to give me any of that funny money, is he?
Yeah, he'll probably, like, close the drawer on his hand when he's, like, when he's, like, taking your money or, like...
And then he'll pull out a big rubber thumb over his real thumb.
Yeah, he might give you some really tiny money or something next to some money that's too big.
He'll write you a huge check.
Yeah. Yeah, he'll write you a big check. That's funny. Yeah, but anyway, they gave him a fucking ultimatum, and he was like, I choose Bodino. Which is insane. That's an insane thing to do.
Well, it actually kind of reminds me of this book I'm reading, this Bertrand Russell collection of essays.
Oh,
the okay. two I read that I think have a lot to do with this podcast, and also what you just said, were, like, The Importance of Being Idle, and I forget the title of the second one, I think it's, like, The Pleasure of Useless Knowledge or something.
Oh, okay.
And so... And the first one, Bertrand Russell proposes that having free time, basically, and being able to do with it what you please is the key to happiness.
Yeah.
And he says that like, privilege is afforded to rich people, but not to the workers. And he proposes, and he says, you know, like, because of all this technological advancement and all this, really, we should only have a 20-hour work week. And so, like, with a 20-hour work week, people would be able to to have the freedom to pursue what they want
Like, you know, getting kicked in the nuts with a giant shoe.
That's exactly right. So in Bertrand Russell's social democratic utopia, Bodino would spend 20 hours of his week, I don't know what bankers do, counting money.
I really don't know what they even do.
I know what bank tellers do.
Yeah.
As far as I'm concerned, that's what bankers do.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I thought. I never really thought that much about it. I'm like, so you just like... You're just like a cashier, but for cash.
There's like this big safe in the back of a building that they like spin to get into, and it's full of gold bars.
That'd be a wonderful clown gag, you know, to open the giant safe. There's a lot of opportunities in there.
So Bodino would be 20 hours being a banker, 20 hours being Bodino, and you'd be happy. You wouldn't have to do this ultimatum.
I fully agree with that. I mean, like, I work, like, 3 days a week, and it is... I'm, like, living that dream right now, honestly.
It's true. Yeah.
And it's, like, wonderful.
For 20 hours a week, you're a barback.
Yep.
For 20 hours a week, you're a clown. the other part of this Bertrand Russell, another thing he proposes is... You know, he's writing in 1930, so the stuff is kind of its time, but it's pretty, it's pretty pertinent to today, too. He talks about how, like, education and knowledge is becoming more utilitarian. They're, in school, they aren't really teaching you the joy of learning, and they're teaching you what they think you need to know for a career or whatever, you know. And so he says that, like, knowing about the birds that we see or the sky that we see, like, makes us happier, just having knowledge. And and this was actually in the introduction, but so it was a different writer, but he's still using the line of thought. He says that he's eating an apricot that fell from a tree in his friend's yard, and he learned that the word apricot comes from, it's like a Latin root from precocious, and it's called precocious because the apricot's one of the first fruits of the year to be ripe, but they don't know where he says the A was added by accident. And he said that
it was added by accident.
That's what he says, yeah. And he says that knowing that as he eats the apricot made it taste all the more sweet.
Okay. I wrote a little thing very similar to that.
Yeah?
Like when I was feeling kind of sad, like a year ago. And it was like about eating cheese.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, If I eat the whole block of cheese, you know, like, I'll go to the store and I'll get a piece of nice cheese, and I'll sit and I'll eat the whole thing. You're not supposed to eat the whole thing. And the way that I stop myself from, not from eating it, but from feeling bad about eating it, was I would read the Wikipedia page about the cheese. You know? So, like, And my theory was it turned my, like, gluttony into sort of, like, this fascination.
Yeah.
So, like, I was like, well, I ate a shitload of cheese, but at least I learned something. You know, like, or like, you know, like, I feel like it's, like, there's, like, the glutton, and then there's, like, the fat chef.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, who is, like, happier?
So, did you learn about the cheeses you ate?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of cheeses were you eating?
Well, I learned about, like, it honestly wasn't really that interesting. But it enhanced my experience.
Sure.
I learned about, like, blue cheese,
You were eating blocks of blue cheese?
Not a block, like a wedge.
Okay, I know, blue cheese just seems a lot to just eat. eat by itself.
Well, that's why I felt bad.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I fully agree with that, you know?
Yeah.
It's like a food show or something like that, you know, it's like, or being like a sommelier or something like that, you know? There's like infinite things that you can learn about the things that you're putting in your body. And it's just like fun to talk about, fun to learn about. It fully enhances the experience of life.
Yeah.
So much. And it is completely unnecessary. Like, I could go, I don't know. I fully agree with it. I'm going to find that passage of that thing that I wrote, and maybe I'll read that next time, because I remember it being funny. But maybe it's not. I don't know. I didn't explain it very well.
Where do you keep the things you write?
In little books. In little books. I have so many little journals. When I die, there will be such an embarrassing paper trail. But, you know, whatever. Fuck it. You gotta do what you gotta do. It's a wonderful habit, I think. But yeah, I fully agree with, like, I fully agree with both of those sentiments.
Yeah.
Like, free time.
I figured
time.
You might. It's kind of fun to, well, it's like, it feels good to read things that, like, famous old smart dead guys wrote that, like, reaffirm your beliefs and life choices.
Yeah. It's really funny to be validated by a philosopher
or yeah.
something like that and be like, yeah, I should play hacky sack all day.
Yeah.
Yeah. I should smoke weed and, like, only work 3 days a week. You know? Like,
yeah.
I mean, that's what Alan Watts would tell you, too.
Right.
And, you know, yeah. I don't know. Be here now. Yeah.
Yeah, I also got the Alan Watts book, Anxiety Something or the Other.
Or The Wisdom of Insecurity?
Yeah, I haven't started reading it yet, but it's basically Be Here Now, right? That's the main takeaway from that one.
The book has, like, I think a lot of young people read it because they, like, see the title and they think, oh, I'm insecure. Like, let me read this book. Or at least that's what I thought when I picked it up.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, and then I read it, and it's mostly about the dealing with impermanence.
Mm.
So it's like like you're never going to find stability in life because everything could be gone in an instant.
Yeah,
and it's about like being okay with that impermanence, kind of. I don't know. Interesting thing about that book is, with at least the copy that I read, was there's like a intro from Deepak Chopra in it, and he read that book when he was like 30 or something like that, and he was a doctor.
Yeah.
And he was just partying all the time.
Yeah.
And like he read that book and then he's like, oh, I need to change my life.
Really?
Yeah. And it's kind of the same as Bodino. He was like this doctor who was miserable, and then he was like, oh, this is not fulfilling me. I'm going to become Deepak Chopra.
Yeah. Deepak like, Chopra is kind of a snake oil salesman, right? He's kind of full of shit.
I mean, he's like full of shit.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, I don't know. Not really. Well, I don't know. I haven't really read much of his shit. But I think, you know, all those spiritual new age guys are like all saying the same thing as like Alan Watts or as like any like, you know, any religion. It's all saying the same shit, just with different words.
Seems like some of those guys like to like go on Dr. Phil or something, which is like a bad sign to me.
Yeah, I think I saw Deepak Chopra in New York once, like eating a salad in the restaurant I worked at.
Oh yeah.
And this guy I worked with was like, "Is that Deepak Chopra over there?" And I was like, "Ha ha ha ha," like that'd be funny. And then I looked at him and I was like, "Oh shit, yeah, there he is. He's just eating at the Standard. Shit is weird. It's like, I don't know if you like." Like, how could you be, like, a spiritual being and then just be, like,
I'm going to go eat salad at
this, like, go fancy, to Starbucks.
Famous bullshit thing. Yeah. I mean, I guess at the end of the day, they're just, like, they're just a human as much as anyone.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think, I don't know, I guess that's the irony of it all. If you want to, like, spread your thought system or whatever, you have to indulge in...
I think it just is bad when it becomes self-serving.
Yeah.
It's like, it's, you can't, like, the whole point of it of is to help other people. And then once it becomes self-serving, then it gets culty. And
right, like Osho. Bad. Like,
yeah. Which, another documentary I need to finish watching.
It gets, I didn't, I felt like I wasn't crazy about Wild Wild Country.
It's like not that good?
I don't know. It just like, I wasn't compelled to finish it.
I watched, like, the first episode, and I was like, yeah, okay. I don't know. It didn't really grip me. I was mostly watching it because my friend Saya's grandma is, like, best friends with that Sheila chick.
Oh, really?
Who was. And Saya used to go to, like, the compound or something, like, when she was a baby. And they'd dress her in red and shit.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, and I think her parents, like, didn't know that it was a cult. You know, they're like, oh, yeah, go with like... Aunt Sheila or whatever.
I think, I mean, do you think, if you know you're in a cult, you'll immediately want to leave the cult? Or do you think there's a part where you're like, I'm in a cult?
Yeah, there's definitely a part probably where you're like, fuck, I'm in a cult. They talk about it in, what was that cult movie we watched?
Holy Hell.
Holy Hell.
I loved Holy Hell.
Yeah, like, well, the woman that was, like, made to have an abortion with her... with the man she loved, like, yeah, twice or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, I think after, like, the first one, she was like, fuck, I'm in a cult. And then she couldn't get out. That was a really good documentary. But, yeah, I think there's, like, kind of, like, a point where you realize, and then maybe you're already in too deep or something. I don't know. It's like, but people join cults and shit like that so that, because they, like, come to the same realization that, like, Bodino had, that, like, fucking Deepak Chopra had. There's this guy, I saw
well,
this.
What the realization is that there's more to life than what they're, than the grind of what society expects or whatever.
George Harrison had it, like, he was, like, Adam Yauch had it. Is that how you say his last name?
Yeah.
It's like they achieve success, and then they're like, fuck, I have everything I've ever wanted, and I still feel like shit. And, you know, I don't know. There's this guy called Slow-Mo.
Yeah.
You know Slow-Mo?
You talk about Slow-Mo.
He was like a doctor of... I think he was, like, a neurosurgeon, and he started to, like, go, he developed, like, face blindness or something like that, and then he just, now all he does is roller skate. I don't know. That's another one of those people. He just, like, roller skates really slow on one leg.
Yeah.
Down, like, I don't know, in Santa Monica or something like that, just on one leg going in slow motion on a roller skate. He looks insane. But I love that documentary, too. I don't know. How are we doing?
I think we're good. I think we could call it. 40 minutes? Cool.
Yeah, okay.